Welcome to the Gay Buddhist Forum, where teachers from all schools of Buddhism offer their perspectives on the Dharma and its application in modern times, especially for LGBTQI audiences. These talks are offered freely to the world and made possible by appreciative listeners. If you would like to support our efforts to share the Dharma with underserved audiences, please visit gaybuddhist.org. There you can donate, find a list of upcoming speakers, or enjoy many hundreds of these recorded talks dating back to 1996.
Well, without further ado, I want to welcome again Donald Rothberg. Thank you, Donald, for joining us to give your teachings. For those of you who don't know, for all who don't know, Donald is a meditation teacher who teaches in loving kindness meditation, as well as teaches on socially engaged Buddhism. He's received training in Tibetan Dzogchen and Mahamudra practice, and is the author of a book called The Engaged Spiritual Life, A Buddhist Approach to Transforming Ourselves and the World. So he's been with us many, many times. And Donald, I'll pass it on to you. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Jeff. And I'm pleased to be here. It's a very packed weekend in a way. We have Pride Month, and we also have Juneteenth, and we have Father's Day. So a lot going on, if there wasn't a lot already. So again, I'm pleased to return. I've really enjoyed my continuing connection with GBF over quite a number of years, and remembering that actually, I think as many of you know, the origins of GBF were connected with a summer institute that I was one of the guiders for in the early 1990s. And GBF, to the best of my knowledge, came out of a lot of what we were doing in that summer institute. So very good to be here. Partly in consultation with Jeff, I wanted to explore a theme that's been alive in my own practice for the last few months. And this is the theme of faith or confidence or trust in our practice, really the sense of confidence in our own being, confidence in our practice. For some of us, one of these words will resonate more, you know, maybe confidence or trust. For some of us, faith is very linked with, let's say, old models of religiosity, and faith can even veer into fundamentalism or a kind of regime where if you're not faithful, there are repercussions. One illustration of that is in a very short video, which I want to show, which shows some of the negative repercussions of not having faith if there is a particular kind of leader. And in this video, the leader happens to be Darth Vader. So we'll see this video.
Technical data they've obtained.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe. I suggest we use it.
Don't be too proud of this technological terror you've constructed. The ability to destroy a planet is insignificant next to the power of the Force.
Don't try to frighten us with your sorcerer's ways, Lord Vader. Your sad devotion to that ancient religion has not helped you conjure up the stolen data tapes, or given you clairvoyance enough to find the rebels' hidden fort.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Enough of this. Vader, release him.
As you wish.
So, I enjoy bringing that in a Dharma talk. How many of you can relate to that personally in terms of your own history of related to faith? So So what I want to actually explore is how this confidence becomes deeper. What is confidence? What is this trust or faith? How do we develop it? What stands in the way? And I think we can really also ask the question, how do we have faith or confidence, which maybe for some of us might be the faith or confidence in goodness or love being at the deepest part of our being. How do we have that sort of faith given what we find in the world? You know, this is a quote that some of you may know from Anne Frank. This was written in 1944, 1 month before she and her family were sent to the concentration camp. She said, "It's difficult in times like these. Ideals, dreams, and cherished hopes rise within us, only to be crushed by grim reality. It's a wonder I haven't abandoned all my ideals. They seem so absurd and impractical. Yet I cling to them because I still believe, in spite of everything, that people are truly good at heart." Right in the midst of very severe oppression. So how do we have that faith and whatever, however we frame it, a faith in our ultimate wisdom, compassion, and love? However you see that, how do we have that with all that's happening in the world, in this country, with all the various maneuvers going on to, you know, how does human goodness look in the light of voter suppression, right? How do we understand all this, or the relative inaction with climate issues? How do we have confidence or faith, or how do we have it when we look to our own challenges and difficulties, our own limitations? How do we have a sense of confidence or faith at times when we seem a little bit lost, or when we still find that the trauma from 30 or 50 years ago is still active in my life? How do we have that faith or confidence, or we doubt ourselves, or what, however it is for us? So what I want to do fairly briefly, because I want to give a good chunk of time for us to talk together, which is actually my favorite part for me of teaching. I'll just say that. So I want to fairly briefly talk first about how faith is held traditionally in the teachings of the Buddha. Secondly, talk about something like the stages of the development of faith in our own practice. I think how does faith or confidence begin? How does it get more mature? What do we work through? And then lastly, I want to point to a few practices that can help us to work more consciously to develop this confidence, trust, or faith. So in the traditional teachings, the word that's translated as faith is sadha, S-A-D-D-H-A. In Sanskrit, I think it's S-R-A-D-D-H-A, a little bit different, shraddha. And it has different meanings. Sometimes it can be that one has a strong connection with the historical figure of the Buddha, or with the fact of the Buddha's awakening, or energy to actually follow the path. That sometimes is what sadha is, energy to practice, the sense that following the path will bring me freedom. It can be a faith in the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. You know, these are more traditional models. It can be something which takes one beyond the the initial difficulties of practice, the so-called hindrances. It can be something which lets us be with all the ups and downs of practice. In one of the key models where sadha is clarified, the model of the five spiritual faculties, there are these five qualities, and they're grouped together in two sets of two, and then mindfulness is sort of the guide for everything. So sadha, or faith, is linked with wisdom. And then there's also energy and concentration, which are also a pair. And it's often said that when sadha, or faith, is strong, a wisdom may not be well developed. And in a similar way, we can have a lot of wisdom, but not necessarily faith. And the teachings are really pointing towards their integration, the integration of wisdom and this confidence. So in a sense, we have somewhat similar to what we find in Western traditions. We have a sense of confidence and trust and faith meeting and being integrated with understanding. So it's not blind faith. It's a kind of confidence that's rooted in understanding and rooted in experience. That is pointing towards what sadha would mean in a more mature form. So how do we develop it? And what are some of our experiences that we find that help us to develop this sense of confidence? Again, it's on many levels: faith in our own being, confidence in our own being, confidence in practice, confidence in teachings, confidence in maybe in teachers. And maybe initially we might have a certain faith in a teaching. We may have been introduced maybe to practice at a certain time when we were going through difficulties, and we found that mindfulness, loving kindness, compassion can really help the experience of challenge and difficulty be workable. A lot of confidence can come from seeing the workability of experience. That's a fruit of practice. And in fact, there is one of the lesser known teachings is called the liberative dependent origination. And this is, the traditional model of dependent origination is a model of the cycles of how dukkha or suffering keeps on happening in the circle. Liberative dependent origination is how freedom and liberation occur. And the first factor is when we start to see suffering and dukkha in a different way. When another way to say it in a very simple way is we see the workability of experience. We see the workability of being stuck, of being reactive, and so forth. So we can have a sense of the faith in the workability of experience. We can have initially, maybe there can be faith in a teacher or the figure of the Buddha. We can have certain experiences, sometimes near the beginning of our practice, that give us a certain kind of faith. I had something like this when I think my first retreat in insight meditation. I had done some Zen practice before that, but I had my first retreat at the Insight Meditation Society in Massachusetts. It was 2 weeks, and something opened up for me. I had a sense of the opening up, for example, of the energy of the body, the subtle energy of the body. And it was like a new world. I hadn't really known that, except a little bit with psychedelics. But I hadn't really known that. And it opened up, and it was stable. And I just felt like, and I felt calm and peace like I had never felt before. And it was something like, whoa. This is, I feel like I've come home in a way. And maybe some of you have had those kind of initial experiences where you felt a kind of coming home or a kind of confidence. How many can actually think of experiences you've had where there was some kind of, some experience gave you initial significant confidence, and almost like it's not even like you think about it. It's just in your guts, right? It's in your being. And so again, that's where maybe the confidence or trust really differs from the more, I don't know if it's traditional model, but the conventional model of faith is something which is about belief, and I have to believe this. Here, confidence and faith is more something that's increasingly in our being, in our guts and so forth. This faith or confidence gets really tested by difficult experiences, you know, and we can see where our confidence is put in question. You know, I was reflecting on this in terms of it being also a very significant part of the development of faith or confidence is seeing what shuts us down, seeing what makes practice hard. You know, and I was thinking in terms of Pride Month, of the ways that I think so many of us may have experiences of the past, may have certain kind of wounds from childhood, difficult childhood experiences, even trauma that can lead to limiting beliefs about our own worth, our own goodness, right? That can start when we're children. And this is for everyone, but it gets intensified when there's systemic oppression, right? And that there, you know, whether it's the social oppression or the way that we internalize the messages of the society, and we can develop limiting beliefs. They could be limiting beliefs of I'm not okay, or something is wrong with me, or I'm basically weird. Anyone recognize that one? I'm kind of weird. Let's have a show of hands. Okay. No one's keeping score. Okay. But I'm basically weird. And, you know, this can be a source of wonder and glory, but it also can be a source of at times shutting down or doubt or lack of confidence. You know, and, you know, we know from the research even on implicit bias and so forth that the phenomenon of internalized oppression is very real, right? That we internalize the messages of the society even when we consciously don't agree with them, right? It's quite striking. You know, the research shows that over 50% of Black people have anti-Black bias in their own minds. And, you know, we can find that across all forms of oppression, you know, that we internalize it even when we disagree consciously, right? And so working through this and developing confidence is a lot. And I think it's, for many of us, it's a lifetime of work to work through those dimensions of doubt that are, you know, often reinforced, socially, you know, and to come to healing and transformation. And so this is a really crucial part of the development of of confidence and faith. It's working through those places where there is difficulty. Sometimes we actually are in places where we actually don't know what's happening, and we have periods when we don't know what's happening, but we almost have the faith to continue, or the confidence just to continue the journey, you know, to not know what comes next, but to really open up and have a kind of, you know, there's a certain point, there's a kind of confidence that emerges about one's own life journey, you know. And again, I think it's very important that there are periods at times of not knowing. When, you know, I've had several periods, you know, for a year, year and a half, when I really wasn't sure what came next. But I had enough confidence or trust developed so I could be with the unknowing. And both periods were ultimately fruitful. But there, so part of confidence is actually a confidence in which one actually doesn't know even what's going on or what the, when the process ends. You know, I think of, I work with one person who's going through about a 2 year period of work. It's now about, I don't know, it's almost 2 years of working through childhood trauma. Right. And we would both like for the process to be over. It has, you know, has physical manifestations, emotional, interpersonal, all sorts of material. But at a certain point, some kind of faith develops that I don't know where this is going, how it's going to end, how long this or that challenge is going to be there. But there's a kind of faith in one's own being that develops over time. You know, how many can relate to having had those periods of not knowing, you know, in which, yeah, you had to really just be with the process, not knowing quite when some challenge would end or when things would clarify. And we can find this in the lives of a lot of people who are, maybe we are highly respected and publicly known. You know, Thich Nhat Hanh, for example, went through a 5-year process of not knowing, in which he was, after being forced out of Vietnam. He couldn't return to Vietnam. This was in the 1970s. And he was trying to do work with the boat people who were escaping from Vietnam. And there was hostility to this work from the governments of Thailand and Singapore. And he felt like he had to just let go of those efforts. And he actually took about 5 years in which he was meditating, reading, and gardening. And he wasn't sure what would come out of it. And what came out of it was what we might call the last 40 years of his life work, which has reached thousands and maybe millions of people. And so these things happen like that. And as the practice of cultivating confidence or faith or trust matures, I think really related to that sense of not knowing, actually I used to do a lot of teaching with my colleague Diana Winston, and we had one model we worked with was called the importance of not knowing. And we had some teenagers correct that, and they said, you can't just have not knowing. You have to have not knowing but keeping going. Right? So they added that. And so, you know, I think one of the qualities I was really pointing to, these periods of not knowing but keeping going, is a development more and more of a faith in our own being, a confidence in our own being, which can get shaken at times. But we may have, I think as the practice gets deeper and deeper, we may have, I think, what is close to the deepest level of faith or confidence, which is that my own being is linked with the goodness, the love, the awareness of the universe. You know, that in a sense, I am, my own individual being is an expression of love, wisdom, and compassion. You know, Ram Dass says, I am loving awareness, that there's some kind of confidence there. And it's actually a confidence that ultimately we learn actually how not even to need to do anything, that the energy of goodness and wisdom, compassion, increasingly comes through us. And we may experience this at certain times. I think my experience is it gets stronger. You know, and there are moments when we don't feel that at all, but that gets stronger. Some sense of my own being, faith in my very being, without questions. Yeah, again, how many have at least had some experience of that, some touching of that? And so that is, you know, I'm really delighted by that resonance in the group. And maybe we can share some of those experiences in a moment. So I think we find that sense of things, that sense of confidence can even be there in highly difficult or challenging experiences when we maybe are threatened with death or dying or something very dear to us is at risk. You know, that we find, again, I've studied the lives of people, and they're amazing stories of people who manifest something like that faith or confidence in perilous, difficult situations. This is from also actually from the time of the Holocaust. This is a woman who's not as well known as Anne Frank, Etty Hillesum. Does anyone know her work? Very, very powerful. Etty Hillesum. And she was a young woman in Amsterdam, probably in her early 20s in 1941 when the Nazis occupied. Eventually, she died in Auschwitz, and she kept a journal that was recovered. And she kept this journal all the way until the last step before she was sent to Auschwitz. She was in a transit camp. And I would just want to read this sort of as a example of almost like a unimaginable faith, even in those conditions. This was from 1944 also. The misery here is quite terrible, and yet late at night when the day has slunk away into the depths behind me, I often walk with a spring in my step along the barbed wire. And then time and again, it soars straight from my heart. I can't help it. That's just the way it is. Like some elementary force, the feeling that life is glorious and magnificent, and that one day we shall be building a whole new world. Against every new outrage and every fresh horror, we shall put up one more piece of love and goodness, drawing strength from within ourselves. We may suffer, but we must not succumb. And if we should survive unhurt in body and soul, but above all in soul, without bitterness and without hatred, then we shall have a right to a say after the war. Quite extraordinary.
Could you spell her name again?
Hillesum. So, three practices to suggest, and then we'll have some discussion. The first is see what develops this confidence. Notice moments when the confidence develops. See the ways in which your confidence develops. Tune in to those moments when you feel confidence. And then secondly, look at those moments also of doubt. See when doubt is there. Again, some of this can take long-term work. Work with the doubt. Work with that which stands in the way of confidence. And see, what really helps to work through the different layers of doubt. Identify the different dimensions of doubt or lack of confidence. And then finally, cultivate those experiences which build confidence or faith. Maybe do them every day. You know, see what really develops confidence or faith. It might be connecting with beauty or connecting with joy or being with certain people or being with certain friends. Have a list of five qualities or five ways that faith or confidence develops and work with them every day. Work with some of them every day, almost consciously developing that sense of confidence or faith. So let me stop here and maybe just invite you to take a moment to reflect on what may have touched you, some of your own personal stories that have come up, any questions you might have. Let's take about 30, 40 seconds just to reflect and see what's there for you. So thank you so much for your kind attention and for being willing so many times to raise your hands and share that sense of common experience. So anyone want to share an experience? It could be of something which really developed faith or confidence, some of your own perspectives. It looks like Matthew has the raised hand. We can either do the raised hand or can also, I can see everyone, so you could also, so I see Matthew and then Clint. Yeah.
Hello, everybody. Thank you. Thank you so much for this is a subject. Faith is kind of has become integral to my practice. I think that was one of the first, my first introduction to the idea of faith was through Thich Nhat Hanh's, The Heart of Buddha's Teachings, where he says that it's, you know, for me coming from a Christian background, faith had to do with belief and his, you know, his, this idea that no, it has to do with trust and confidence in the teachings. So it always comes up for me. You know, sometimes, you know, I'll go, you know, I'll look at some aspect of the Dharma and say, okay, yeah, that's true for everybody else, but not for me. You know, it's just, you know, it can't help me. It can help everybody else. Or just facing some kind of circumstance where I doubt that the Dharma can see me through it. And what I've developed is just this kind of steadfast, don't listen to yourself. You know, the Dharma works. Okay. And oftentimes, when I'm experiencing that kind of doubt, it's a kind of falling back to less skillful ways of dealing with the situation. And that said, I think the greatest contributors to faith is the Sangha. That's why the Sangha is part of the three jewels, to have, you know, to be able to be with like-minded people, to be able to see the Dharma working, to be able to, you know, be reassured through other people's experience of the power of the Dharma. So I'll just leave that with that.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Matthew. I think thank you particularly for that last addition, because I didn't mention the Sangha as such a power. And I think it's really crucial to name that in a lot of ways. I think one of the things that I've noticed, particularly in working in groups with what we could call limiting beliefs, is that when one can see that the conditioning is so similar and it's shared, it takes a lot of the power away from it, and you can name it. We still have to deal with it, but those kind of old habits that you were naming, when people name them together, that's why I like to have the raising of hands, just to see that commonality is so crucial. Thank you. We have Clint and then Thomas.
I've heard the expression having faith, something similar to another path I was on, trust in the universe.
Yeah.
And there are some ways where I was deeply skeptical. I said, you know, all these horrible things happen to people that are basically good people. How can I trust it in the universe? But I have also noticed in key critical moments in my life where I felt there was no solution. I was trapped. I couldn't get out of a very negative situation. And something from the out of the blue that was totally unrelated to the way that I was handling the problem would come up, and the problem would basically go away. And I have one particular instance of that way back when I was about 40. I hated the job I was doing. I'd done it for 12 years and I quit it. And I just said, I want to go work in the environment, even though I had no background in that. So I was doing all the right things you do to look for a job. I was networking. I was, what color is your parachute? I was writing my job history. I was getting counseling. And I was, you know, just putting myself out there and I could not find any work. And I was just living on my savings alone and I was really panicking. I thought, like, I'm going to lose all my money. I'm going to be homeless. I can't find work. It's hopeless. And I remember I was on the Green Gulch Trail up in the mountain. And I just sat down, just looked at the ocean. And, you know, I just was crying. I just said, I acknowledge this is beyond me. I don't have what it takes to solve this problem. You know, please help me. You know, it was all very dramatic and high drama. And my anxiety just went away completely, totally. I mean, it was quite astonishing.
Well,
and 3 weeks later, I got the job that I took for 23 years before I retired. But I don't think putting it out like that meant that that's why I got the job. But I do think that the period of calm before I did get the job, where the anxiety was gone, was the universe hearing my plea and saying, okay, you're opening the door for me, so I'm coming in. And that was a very, very powerful moment in my life.
Yeah. Thank you, Clint. It's good to see you again. And and thank you so much for that story. I imagine most or all of us have something similar. And again, I think it is helpful to point to the way that there was something there that helped the anxiety to go away. Something, you know, it might have gone a different way, right? Could have been something else could have happened, but I think some kind of faith or confidence, especially in the process, you know, it can get tricky when we have faith that, oh, it'll work out by this time, or we have sort of particular strings attached to the faith. That can get tricky, right? Yeah. But it's more some confidence in the process and in my own depths of being. And there are a lot of nuances. We could easily take 10 weeks on this topic. There are a lot of nuances and tricky aspects to it, but thank you. Yeah. Thomas, please.
Donald, thank you so much for being with us again. And what a great talk. You know, as you were talking, I was thinking that our modern society especially has this inertia and this pace to it. And it really encourages us to have, this is about not knowing, you know, the idea of not knowing and just sitting with it. But we're sort of encouraged by all the examples around us, talking heads and online stuff, to have an opinion, to, you know something, to come to a decision and defend it and like have some certainty. And the idea of not knowing and just sitting with it, especially, you know, for 5 years, like Thich Nhat Hanh did, it just feels like, we would be letting life pass us by. It seems almost like a luxury. And I know the value of it, but I was thinking, how do we not fall into despair that, you know, we don't know, that we're just letting it pass us by? And there you came back with, the three practices, especially that third one about, you know, having a list on hand, be observing in the first two and watching what's happening, and then keeping a list that can sort of lift us up. Because I know when I fall into, you know, let's call it hopelessness, I think despair is like the total loss of hopelessness. But just being in those periods of hopelessness or doubt, I often just fall back and, you know, I just let time pass. Like it'll just go away. And sure enough, it turns around. But I think that suggestion to keep a list on hand that I can go back to if I will remember to do it,
yeah,
could help compress that amount of time that it takes to work through those periods, you know. So I appreciate that very much.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Thomas. It's actually, when you think about it, this quality of confidence and or faith or trust is not actually talked about very much by Western teachers. Maybe because of the backdrop connected with, you know, blind faith and so forth. But, you know, I don't remember finding other people talking about what are practices which cultivate confidence, right? And so I think something like that can be really helpful. I think in the difficult moments, having community, having teachers or teacher to bounce stuff off. Because again, there are a lot of subtleties of all this, a lot of places for confusion possibly. But yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. I think, Jeff, do we have time for one more? I think you're next in line. And then I see
a couple more.
Yeah. I see Cass also and Jim too, but I think should we take those three or should we finish in just a minute or two? What's your call?
Let's take them.
Okay, great.
Like others, I want to thank you for a great talk. For me, models of faith and confidence I get from Gandhi, an experience I had going to see the Dalai Lama after he got his Nobel Peace Prize. Mm-hmm. He did this weekend in San Jose. But when he walked into the room, the feeling was just palpable. You could feel it just fill the room and his presence. And, of course, he was bent over and talked about being just an ordinary monk. Hmm. But, you know, I've gotten that confidence from seeing it in other people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, beautiful. Again, be wonderful, you know, sometimes just to share from whom do we experience that kind of confidence, hmm. just to share from each of our experiences. Cass, and then I think it was Jim. Those were our last two. Please, Cass.
Hi. Thank you for a great and practical talk. It was really useful. No question. I just wanted to thank you for bringing Darth Vader into the Sangha on Father's Day. It really resonated.
Vader.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, it was important to me to bring Darth in. He didn't have that much time, but his words were impactful. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Cass. Jim, please.
Donald, wonderful to see you again and to hear your wise words. I wanted to, William James once said that faith initially is faith in other people's faith.
Yeah.
And you borrow their faith and then begin accumulating your own verification of it. And I think that's a very useful idea. And that was certainly true in my case. Another one is this, the notion of the dark night of the soul, which is broadly described, and we should not be too horribly terrified when we encounter that, because it is on the path. And I remember the Beethoven, even after he became deaf, he discovered he could still compose. But then when he realized that he would never be in love, he could never have a loving relationship, that's what took him down to the bottom. And for a number of years, he didn't compose. And then he started hearing in his mind music that no one had ever heard before. And so late Beethoven music is of a kind really unmatched, except by Bach, I think. But anyway, it's predictable on this journey. And I think that can be an element of faith. We're not in charge. It's not up just to our practices. Our psyche will take us down and strip us bare for our own growth. And it's just part of the trip. At least that's been my experience.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Jim, for bringing in that sense of what's sometimes called the dark night of the soul, which was a term coming from St. John of the Cross from the 16th century in Spain. I've actually taught a few times short retreats on the Dark Night of the Soul, or co-taught, and it's a powerful area. I'll just make a few comments. One of the significant things about that, I think it goes with your example of Beethoven, is that for St. John of the Cross, the Dark Night of the Soul is a protracted period. It can even last for years, mm-hmm. in which there's everything feels dry. The usual spiritual juice isn't there. The understanding isn't there. And John thought that this was actually virtually never the experience of practitioners who are at the beginning of their practice. It was always the result of significant maturity. Only when one has a lot of maturity do you have these really difficult experiences. That was in the text from the 16th century. And also he saw it as opening up to the most profound spiritual levels, that it's almost like it takes away certain conditioned dimensions of self and of agency and of the doer that have to be taken away before the deeper levels will open up. I think, and so it's a very interesting understanding. And many people have also suggested, I don't know if this is the most wonderful note to finish on, but have noted that we need these capacities of not knowing, of being with difficulty for a sustained time, because collectively we may be opening up to a kind of collective dark night of the soul in the next decades. We don't know. Yeah. But to have this capacity that we've been talking about is not just valuable personally, but it's valuable on a community level and on a social level. So maybe that's a more confident way of saying it. So anyway, thank you so much, everyone. And I think we can thank you for your stories. I could stay for another hour and listen to your stories about all this and keep on talking. It'd be a great focus for a whole day, wouldn't it? Yeah. And so thanks so much. And I'll turn it over to, is it Jeff or is it David now? Yeah.
David.
Yeah.
Thank you, Donald, for your talk very much today, and for the opportunity for the dialogue. And thanks everyone for joining. We want to make this time for any announcements that people might have of things happening in the community they want to share. Give a pause. Just unmute your share.
I can make one.
Uh-huh, please.
Yeah, just in terms of my upcoming teaching, I'll be doing a day long at Spirit Rock, quite related to what I was talking about with limiting beliefs. The theme will be transforming the judgmental mind, which includes both being judgmental of self and judgmental of other, and will bring in dimensions of social conditioning as part of the day. That's July 11th through Spirit Rock, and there's going to be a 6-week follow-up series, which is going to be organized through the Mindful Awareness Research Center at UCLA. If you do the day long, you can, or if you've done previous work with me on that topic, you could then keep it going further for another 6 weeks. Yeah.
Thank you. And just to clarify, that's on Zoom. Will that be hosted on Zoom?
Yeah, it's all going to be on Zoom. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks. And people can find that by going to the Spirit Rock website, I'm assuming.
Yeah, Spirit Rock website. Okay. And then it should be the follow-up series. I'm going to put it on my website as soon as I get all the information from UCLA, but it'll be through the UCLA program there. So, yeah.
Great. Thank you. Any other announcements? Cool. Thank you. Well, just as a reminder to let people know that Wednesday night, GBF has a sit every Wednesday at 7:30. It's 30-minute discussion, or it's 30-minute meditation followed by an open discussion that's facilitated. And the details are on the website, gaybuddhist.org. And I want to thank Donald again and invite everybody to please consider supporting the Sangha and supporting Donald by offering Donna today. I just posted in the chat the direct PayPal link. You could also go to gaybuddhist.org donations page to see other ways of giving. But that supports not only our teachers, but also a continued support for the San Francisco Buddhist Center, of our kind of physical home when we are there. We're supporting their expenses still through the pandemic, as well as newsletters every quarter. I think that's about it. We typically wrap up with the dedication of merit. I always like to offer opportunity for our teacher to do that, to hear okay. from other people's styles. Could you do the dedication of merit, Donald?
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, so first, reflecting for yourself what may have been of benefit from our morning, maybe related to the theme of faith or confidence or trust. Maybe something else just opened up in the meditation or the talk and discussion that not even necessarily directly related to that. Just see what was of benefit for yourself, maybe even where you want to take it further. And sit with that for about 30 seconds. And then we move into the traditional dedication of merit. May the benefits of our time together be there for us, be there in many different ways for people in our own lives, for all beings in our own lives. And then may we offer the benefits beyond our own circles out into the larger world. May the benefits be offered to all beings, knowing that we are part of all beings. Thank you.
Thanks again, Donald.
Yeah. Thanks, Donald. Thanks, David.
Yeah, thank you, David.
Thank you, David. Thank you, Jeff. Thanks for your wonderful technical help, David, that permitted Darth Vader to come through.
Glad we made it work. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Okay, bye-bye, everyone.
Have a good week.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Gay Buddhist Forum. If you would like to hear several new talks per month and be notified of upcoming speakers so you can participate live, please subscribe to this podcast, like us on Facebook, and join our mailing list by visiting gaybuddhist.org.